15 minutes away from 4 o'clock, Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Taking you up to 5 tonight, me, Andy Bulbarch, and Matt Douglas with you for another hour and 15 minutes. And then it's time for our Cleveland Clinic football forecast show presented by Cleveland Clinic. And it comes your way at 5, takes you up to 6:30. Tim and Matt will talk to all the area high school football coaches and get you ready for the 8th week in this 2018 campaign. A very busy weekend if you're a fan of sports like Matt and I are. There's a lot to watch this weekend. Not only the high school football games tonight, the NLCS starts tonight. ALCS tomorrow, lots of college football games tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. Then, of course, you got the NFL slate on Sunday. And here to talk about all of that and much more with us is Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. And Adam, before we get going here, man, congratulations on the 1,000th episode of Bang the Book Radio, man. We all know how hard that is. 1,000 episodes. When you get to four digits, you're doing something right. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I got a lot of people to thank about it, all the guests that I've had and all the listeners that we have as well. It's a tremendous milestone, and I'm hoping for at least 1,000 more.
Absolutely. Well, we've got to start with something that caught my eye when we were at Progressive Field on Monday. Of course, Matt and I, along with Matt Lodi and Tim Alcorn, did the Budweiser's From the Dugout show on Monday before the game, and then had a brief post-game show. And, you know, just kind of following the game on social media while watching out there, there was a tweet that certainly stood out. It was Frankie Lindor's second at bat. And Adam had a thing or two to tweet about this. Went on a little bit of a rant there about Frankie laying a bunt down. And I'll let you kind of elaborate as to why you do not agree with anybody bunting, but more specifically, the best hitter on the team bunting in that situation.
I want to make it very clear. I'm not 100% anti-bunting, but what happens when you put down a bunt is that you're basically resigning yourself to scoring one run. So in late-game situations, the eighth inning, the ninth inning, there's more of a place for it. In the third inning, there's never a place for it, and certainly not with your current best hitter at the plate. Jose Ramirez may be your best hitter overall for the season, but obviously we all know what kind of happened with him. But bunting in the third inning in that situation there, for one thing, it lowered your win expectancy. So when you had first and second, nobody out, your win expectancy was 65.4%. After the sacrifice bunt, it was 64.9%. After the sacrifice fly, 65.3%. So, in essence, one of the things that the Lindor bunt did, while it increased your likelihood of scoring a run, it hurt your win expectancy because outs are precious. Outs are very, very important. You only get 27 of them in a given game. So giving up one of those outs, really not a great idea from a sabermetric standpoint, from a game theory standpoint, from a win expectancy standpoint. Now, I will say, bunting did increase the chances of scoring a run about 7.5%, but it also decreased your chances of scoring more than one run by quite a bit. So that's the give and take. You got a run, you got what you wanted out of it. But I think anybody watching that game, anybody that knows anything about this bullpen, was very aware that one run was not going to be enough. Sure enough, an inning and a half later, a solo home run tied the game. So, you know, I think when you resign yourself to playing for one run, when you're the inferior team with the inferior pitching staff and the clearly inferior bullpen, you're not really setting yourself up for a whole lot of success. I think Francisco Lindor should have been told to swing away. That's the best chance you had in the series. You only had two guys on base in one other inning of that series. And in this instance, you gave up an out, scored one run, and then lost by 8 runs, so it never mattered anyway.
Although that's interesting. I mean, it's very difficult to dispute any of that. You take a look at the sabermetrics, and they tell you in that instance, absolutely, positively, do not bunt. At the core of this, and I think you mentioned this at the very beginning of that, you know, with the only guy that was hitting consistently well for you in that series, that's not necessarily the guy you want to give up an out for just to move a couple of guys over. And as you stated, look, I mean, we all got the impression that two games into the series, just a one-run lead was not going to be enough. I mean, Frankie Lindor had the ability to make it a 3-0 game at that point, or let's just say he gets an extra base hit and they get a couple of runs in, then you're in a position where you've got two guys in score. You've got a guy in scoring position, still nobody out. I've always thought that when you lay a bunt down, you're essentially just giving up an out. And I don't know if he did that by himself or if that was something he was told to do. But either way, the fact that they only got one run out of that, yes, getting the lead was great, but the fact, Adam, that they only got one run out of that entire situation, that was at least to some degree a little bit of a buzzkill, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those things, too, like I said, you know, like I prefaced what I was talking about there, in the eighth or ninth inning where you only need one run, if you need a run to tie the game or if you need a run to win the game or take the lead, there's a time and place for bunting. But in the third inning, when you've got six innings of a game left to go, playing for one run makes no sense to me. You play for the big inning. You play for as many runs as you can possibly get. And also factor into the equation, as you mentioned, that's your best hitter at the plate. You know, you got your eight and nine guys on, and then your number one guy comes up, you turn the lineup over again, and you give the other team an out. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. It does seem like Lindor did that on his own, although Francona did praise it after the fact, which kind of blew my mind a little bit. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you play for one run when you need one run. In the third inning, you need more than one run. And, you know, like I said, it's funny, too, because there was a game I remember a few years ago where I actually wrote up a blog post about this. I think it was Yan Gomes or Roberto Perez. Somebody bunted in the third inning. Yeah, they got their run, and they lost like 12-2. So it was kind of deja vu for me where, you know, again, I mean, you kind of got what you deserved in that situation.
Tough to dispute any of that, no question about it. Well, let's stick with baseball for a little bit here, Adam. You wrote an ALCS preview earlier this week, and you mentioned some really interesting things in there, but one of the things that stood out to me, a tidbit I think that some folks may not know, that's that Boston skipper Alex Cora was A.J. Hinch's bench coach last year, and based on some early betting trends, and we know that Vegas likes to examine these things from every possible angle, but based on some of the early betting trends here, and you know, there's still some time for this to change before the series begins tomorrow. It looks like that doesn't really matter very much to odds makers. Is that a surprise in any way to you?
Not really. I mean, it's one of those things where when healthy, Houston is the best team in baseball to me. And I mean, obviously Indians fans just saw that. And it's something that I've kind of seen, you know, really throughout the entire season. There are no weaknesses on this Houston Astros team. This line opened a little bit lower in the minus 120 range, got bet up to minus 150. It's now come back down a little bit to about minus 135. That implies about 57.5% probability that Houston does win this series. Personally, I think it's a little bit higher than that. So I think Houston in that minus 135 range is a pretty good bet to make here. You know, Alex Cora is a guy, and this is very important, and you know, we kind of saw this with Terry Francona in the division series. He didn't manage proactively enough. He didn't manage aggressively enough. That was one of the big knocks on Aaron Boone against Boston last series, is that he wasn't aggressive enough either, whereas Alex Cora was. So I think Alex Cora picked up on a lot of things with Houston last year in terms of win expectancy, game theory, probability, things of that sort. So I think he'll manage this series very aggressively. I think the problem for Alex Cora here is that he's just outgunned. I mean, Houston has the deeper pitching staff, both in the rotation and in the bullpen. They've got the better overall lineup here as well. And, I mean, we talk about the importance of bullpens in the playoffs where it's so specialized. Houston has the edge there. Craig Kimbrell is basically a one-inning guy for Boston. They don't have a fireman type of guy to come and pitch, you know, get you five or six outs, something like that. I think that winds up being a key factor in this series. I think Houston moves on, but I will say, I bet that Houston coaching staff gets poached for another manager again this year.
Wouldn't be a surprise. I mean, boy, they looked like world beaters in this series against the Indians, and again, certainly looks like they match up well against the Red Sox, even though the Red Sox are the higher seed. Want to take a look at the other side of this now, Game 1 of the NLCS. That's tonight. And boy, when you broke this down, Adam, I thought this was really interesting. You mentioned that playoff experience doesn't necessarily matter when handicapping these games. Why do you think that is?
Well, this was a fantastic article that Russell Carlton wrote over at Baseball Prospectus. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago now at this point in time. I can't imagine the data has changed a whole lot. But we kind of find that, or at least Carlton found that, you know, really performance doesn't matter based on experience. I mean, some guys that have no playoff experience whatsoever are going to embrace that environment, are not going to be the least bit scared by it, not going to be anxious, anything like that. Whereas some guys are just wired differently. Maybe they've been in the playoffs multiple times, but it's still a different kind of feeling for them each and every time. So experience hasn't really, at least playoff experience, hasn't really had too much of an impact. And of course, you know, a pretty good talking point here for this series with the Dodgers, who were in the World Series last year against the Brewers, who, you know, a lot of these guys came into this year without a whole lot of playoff experience. I don't think it's going to be a big factor here. I do like the Dodgers in this series. Once again, like Houston, they're just deeper. They don't have any real weaknesses. The starting rotation is pretty good. The middle relief is solid. The back end with Kenley Jansen is great. The offense is very good. I just think that the Brewers, and I love the Brewers. I mean, you talk about analytics-based front offices. The Brewers I've adopted as my second team behind the Indians because of everything that they've done here over the last few years. I just think, like Boston, they're outgunned a little bit in this series.
Again, we're talking with Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Boy, a lot of interesting scenarios should play out here in both the ALCS and the NLCS. And I'm like you. I like the Brewers a lot. I just kind of feel like in this series, I don't know. Even though we just talked about how the playoff experience doesn't necessarily matter, I do worry about how some of that comes into play here. Want to transition into some football talk here, too, because there's a ton of it this weekend. Want to talk about these DFS value picks for this week in the NFL, Week 6 in fantasy football. You threw some names down in an article that you produced earlier today, and I wanted to give you a chance to kind of expand on this.
Yeah, one of the guys that I like from a quarterback standpoint here this week is actually Baker Mayfield. I mean, I think that this is one of those things where, you know, Todd Haley is starting to tailor the playbook a little bit more to what Baker can do. He's thrown the ball quite a bit here over the last couple of games. And, of course, you know, they have played some overtime games. So there have been some extra snaps and things like that. But the Chargers have allowed the sixth highest adjusted net yards per pass attempt. They don't have that same pass rush without Joey Bosa. The secondary had some injuries in training camp. So I think the Browns here this week, kind of a pretty interesting pick, not just in terms of Baker Mayfield for daily fantasy purposes, but also because you've got a Chargers team playing an early kickoff here against this upstart Browns team that's starting to believe a little bit more. As long as Mayfield takes care of the football, which is a big deal week in and week out, I think the Browns are in an interesting spot this week.
Yeah, tell you what. At the beginning of the year, this was a Charger team, I think, that a lot of people expected some very, very big things from, and they'd be a little bit more of a favorite, I think, if this game was in Los Angeles. I almost said San Diego. I still haven't gotten over that hump just yet. It's a tough thing for me to get used to. But because they're playing on the road, it makes this game a little bit more intriguing. I'm anxious to see how this turns out on Sunday. Adam,
I am too, and real quickly, I know that you got to head to a break here, but also another thing for the Chargers, when you consider them this week, they play in London next week, which is something that we've been trying to talk a little bit more about here on Bang the Book Radio and trying to determine if there's a look-ahead factor to going and playing across the pond, because obviously the Chargers aren't going to go home. They'll practice here for a couple days or maybe in New York City or something like that, then head on to London. So we're kind of wondering about that, and if there's a bit of a look-ahead factor to such a unique experience, taking your family over there, something that breaks up the monotony of the NFL regular season. So the Chargers, you know, from a player standpoint, planning for a week and a half away from home, away from friends and family, and, you know, the comforts of your usual lifestyle. So maybe that plays a role this weekend as well.
I think that's interesting, and we'll definitely dive into that next week, because I know the first of those London game takes place this week. So we'll talk about the effects of traveling across the pond in next week's show. Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll do it again next Friday.
Sounds great, Andy. Thanks, man.
Thank you again. Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Again, big congratulations to Adam and the gang at Bang the Book. 1,000 radio episodes at BangTheBook.com. That's a difficult feat. So, again, congratulations to those guys. That is a remarkable milestone. All right, we need to get to a break as we approach the top of the hour. In about 90 seconds, Matt Douglas will update us on the local news. And at 4:10, we'll talk some high school football with Tim Gebhardt with the Chronicle-Telegram. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 9.